We are live again, take two. This is the second episode of the podcast on Jagadish Chandra Bose and Runaway Cyclone. I'm joined again by a lovely acquaintance turned friend, Jagiseni. Would you like to give yourself a few little words?
Thank you, Adil. Hi, I'm Jagoshini. I am a first-year DPhil research scholar at the Department of History of Science and Medicine at University of Oxford, and we are doing a project called the Diversifying STEM Curriculum Project here at Oxford, of which Adil is also a part. And today we are going to talk about Jagadish Chandra Bose and one of his short stories, because Adil is doing a fantastic project on Bose. And we are hoping that we will, through our exchange of ideas about the story, we will also be able to convey that Bose was much more than a Bengali scientist.
Thank you for your kind words about the project. I was really excited to talk to you, as you know, because of our shared common heritage with Bose, and particularly the fact that he wrote the story in Bangla, which you can read. So that was really exciting to hear your recitations of it. So before we dive in, did you have any general thoughts on the story? How did it make you feel?
Firstly, it was very refreshing to read Bangla after quite a while, because most of the readings that we do as part of our work is in English, but Bangla is my mother tongue. So it was a very refreshing activity. The first thing that I read the story first in Bangla, although we had both the Bangla version and the translated English version. The first reaction that I had, to be very honest, was of course, it is a sci-fi story and something of that genre that is not very common at that time. But what struck me the most was the references Bose gave to his daughter throughout the story. I would like to mention this thing first, because since our whole project, the main theme is diversifying STEM curriculum, a part of this diversification is also gender diversification. And at that time, Bose, who is a scientist of that grandeur, and his references to his daughter, and that his daughter's nudge basically led him to this aha moment in science, is something that I feel would have encouraged and still encourages a lot of young girls who would have otherwise not been persuaded to do science, basically. So that is something that excited me a lot, because a lot of the times, as women, and since I am also biologically a woman, to our ideas, we do not think that they are good enough. But if one reads the story, where the root of it comes from a very young girl, I think she was 12 in the story, or maybe the exact age I cannot really remember. So that is something that I would say was my first thought.
That's really beautiful to hear. And it's really interesting to me because, yeah, he really, in the second part of the story, talks about this, solution that comes from his daughter. Did you say she had a name?
No, I don't think it is mentioned in the
No,
story.
okay, sorry, I thought you said she had a name. But yeah, she's such a small but pivotal part of the story, and I think it's very intentional that she's there, as a narrative.
Exactly.
So one interesting thing I think that we can explore is then the contextual environment that Bose grew up in, as he's considered the father figure of Indian science. There's a lot of colonial roots to that kind of language, but particularly the idea of a Indian man doing Western science in the 20th century, and how a lot of young Indian scientists were discriminated as effeminate babus. If you've heard that term, it was just to discriminate against middle class and upper class Indian intellectuals, and that discrimination was built upon misogyny. So these were effeminate babus. They were not the Western gentleman, genteel kind of upper class. So you do see this kind of through line of discriminating against scientists from a point perspective of misogyny. And like you said, that is again how women are kind of driven out of science in very insidious ways. Do you still see that as a kind of narrative for Bangladeshi women who are in science?
Well, this is not something that I can directly comment upon, but obviously I do think that this is also not something that is very specific to Bangladeshi women, but women in general, because as part of this project, some of the other interns, they are doing a project where, you know, basically the focus is on how young girls are not encouraged enough or sometimes even discouraged from doing science. So when it comes to both, there is this Western science hegemony that we can talk about. We can talk about colonialism coming into play, all of this. But when it comes to a woman scientist, I think it's all of this that we are going to talk about when it comes to both, plus the very fact that, she's a woman. And which would probably lead us not discussing everything that we can about both, because at the very first instance, she would not have been encouraged to pursue science.
Yeah, and Bose was himself, I think, you know, without the women around him, Bose would not be, you know, his wife, Abala Bose herself, was a very famous and staunch feminist who opened up around 70 schools for young girls' educations. And he's also surrounded by Sister Navendri, I think, who was a white Catholic woman who was converted into Hinduist religions, and who funded a lot of Bose's efforts later on. And she was instrumental in the Bose Institute. And then you have people like Biba Chaudhary, who, you know, did work that warranted kind of the Nobel Prize studying under Bose. So he was surrounded by, as most men scientists are, but are erased in history, he was surrounded. But I think what he did, and as like you're saying, he is trying to do, is visibilize this structure and put women in the forefront. It's so nice that we can both see that coming through, even though it's such a small part of the story in some ways. What was interesting about the story is that he's able to write about science in Bangla, in, you know, a traditional language that's not considered part of the scientific global sphere in some ways. So how did that feel, reading scientific language in your own tradition?
So it felt brilliant to read it, especially because it was written during a time when all these anti-colonial sentiments were already brewing, and Bose was at the peak of his career. More importantly, I think what it needs to be mentioned here is that this was part of a short story competition where both this essay won, right? What is also interesting to me is that it was during a time when this particular hair oil concoction, this brand, was a homegrown, Indian homegrown brand. And they were, as part of their competition, they were inviting stories like this. So this is very exemplary, to be fair. And we do not see such things happening at this point of time. So I think historically also, just because, you know, it was a homegrown hair oil brand, they were also trying to incorporate the local sentiments at that time, as in the anti-colonial sentiments, and also the fact that not only Western science, but science that was being done at that place and at that time. So that was very refreshing. But what I would like to know is that since, you know, I have a command over this language, it was very easy for me to situate the story within its spatial and temporal context. But when you read it in English, even though you're the one who is working on this project, did you feel that, you know, you're just reading a story, or did you feel that you're just reading a translation and it would have been better if you read that? This is something I'm very interested to know.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. It's not like I can feel something is missing, if I'm honest. He first wrote the story in a mix of English and Bangla. And then about 40 years later, he revised it so that it's all in Bangla. And even the scientific parts, which were originally translated in English, are now written in Bangla. So I know, as a Pakistani person, Urdu is not seen as a scientific language either. It's seen as a poetic language, and it's, categorized as that only. So I was really interested.
Sorry, but I have to just interrupt a bit here. It's very I think it's so significant when you just said Urdu is looked at as this very poetic language. And similarly, I would like to say that when it comes to scientific writings in Bangla, we are not made aware of that. If you are doing science, it's mostly the training that at least I was aware of in a very urban institutional setting was in English. And in my school especially, it's important that I mention this, was in your school last two final years of school, if you are taking STEM subjects, then it was a compulsion that you are taught in English as a medium. But if you were doing humanities, you were given the option of either choosing Bengali as a medium or as English. So I think it's significant to see how these languages are treated.
Exactly. That's a great point because
Sorry,
I wouldn't
continue.
imagine now, in ways being the kind of diasporic colonized scientific approaches that I embody, being able to talk about science and physics in Urdu. But Bose himself says that science for him was never about East or West, right? It was always about this universal truth that he's searching for. And I think that's beautiful and hope to embody that more going forward in my work as well. So I think that's what I got out from reading, understanding the Bangladeshi translations is that there is space in our languages to be able to convey such complex topics, especially sci-fi, which is, the very kind of elitist of the elites kind of fields in which only hardcore nerds can access. But he's here, with a very comforting and complex story in some ways, explaining it all in Bangla. Something that was interesting to me that you might shed some light on for the listeners and me is the quip when he's talking about the different air pressures, the pressure per square inches exert, where he ends it with saying that the Calcuttan society is under the aforementioned pressures, and it ends with municipal tax, which is pressure per square inch 1 ton. Looking at the history of this, there's obviously quite a lot of histrionics about taxation that the British Raj imposed upon the colonized. Famously, this culminated in, I think, the 1930s with Mahatma Gandhi leading the salt march against the incredible levied salt taxes. So you can see that this is some abstraction of colonial kind of trauma through scientific terms. So I was wondering, in Bangla, how does that translate, and what you just thought of that passage?
Yes, thank you for giving me the reference beforehand because I otherwise would have missed out those very important points about the abstraction of colonial trauma and imperial measurement. So I would like to say that, of course, historically we know that there was this push from the empire to come up with this universal empirical system, and how it was rejected at first. Then again, finally implemented. So to read these empirical measurements, and obviously, if anyone reads this short story, they would know that there is this Bose is basically rejecting the colonial science, and to put it in very crudely, in very straight terms. So it was very, I wouldn't say refreshing is a term, but it was historically very relevant to see a scientist who was practicing at that time in Bengal just doing this, to be fair. And, also he expressed his distrust of the meteorological departments. So in the paragraph right before that, I think, and he said that, how nobody could tell anything despite the claims of the meteorological department saying that, a cyclone is around, but there is no definitive way to prove that it is, or that whether they're saying anything has any element of truth in it. So this was something that was I was very excited to see, less because of its, I'll be honest, less for its scientific significance, but more for its historical significance. If I situated it in the empirical controversy context, and not, and also I don't know if you remember, but in the first demo that we had to give to you, this is what I had talked about, right? That how there was this standardized empirical system that was being, like, there was this constant attempts to implement that, and by the colonial government, like implementing English as the medium of language at that time, which is why historically I think it was very fascinating to read about it.
I remember from that text you showed us the implementation of the, I think, metric system, where they were trying to, the imperial system with kilograms and trying to import those weight systems. And not finding much purchase initially. It's a very interesting source to read. Can you say, in your eyes, what effects that implementation had? Or so the question being that scientific society didn't initially accept the imperial system, right? What would be some of the reasons that they would have to have this kind of ideological difference?
Well, to be honest, I think it would have been a massive change, right? It is not just the empirical system changing, but it is you have to change how you educate in the first place. All these papers that had been written before that, it's just, it's basically uprooting whatever they had done so far and redefining it. And any kind of change, whether it's good or bad, that obviously time tells. But it's always, I think, met with a lot of opposition. So in that case, or in this case, if we look at it neutrally, obviously a neutral lens is not something that's very easy to put on. I think that is the reason for why for the opposition. Yeah,
that's a very good point you made about uprooting a whole system, because that's the kind of violence that is embedded in those kind of practices. It's not about some sort of integration which respects both cultures, but rather a complete overhaul of a system, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So I think we can go into part two and talk about some of the themes there, which you've already kind of touched upon beautifully, about the scientific mysticism of the hair oil. And
we have also talked about intergenerational knowledge expressed through the daughter's advice. I really think, you know, intergenerational knowledge plus the gender aspect is very interesting. And of course we can talk about
in Bengali and Indian society. It's interesting because he's considered the father of modern science, of modern Indian science. Just quickly tying into the intergenerational knowledge in some ways later, but I wanted to ask your opinion about, do you feel that there is an erasure going on with his Bengali origins as a scientist, but the fact that he's considered the father of Bengali sci-fi, there's this dichotomy of science in India applauding him, but in other ways, when he's writing in Bengali, he's applauded as a Bengali.
Well, to make it less serious, we Bengalis like to take credit for what a fellow Bengali does all the time. If someone wins the Nobel Prize, it is as if every one of us has won it, but it's not true. So I think that is that, you know, regionalistic sentiment that comes in. But also it goes on to say a lot about, like, why is it that way? Is it because we have never, like, we always had to fight for credit where it was due? This is a question that I would like to ask. Or is it just a cultural thing? And even if it is a cultural thing, there must be some reason behind it, right? I think that is, even if you are not trying to read too much into it, I think that's the reason, to be honest.
Okay. So that kind of ties into the mysticism as well, because he's obviously expressing a very, some would consider a nationalistic idea of mysticism based in Indian mythology.
Exactly, yeah.
And I'm not too knowledgeable on Vedanta, the Vedanta belief system, but I know the main tenet is about oneness and unity. Is that something that also speaks to you in some ways, in your practice or?
Like personally?
Personally and culturally?
Well, I have, of course it makes sense. Whether I subscribe to it is something that obviously, you know, I think it takes a lifetime to realize this. it's obviously easy if you just, you know, tell yourself that this is something that I'm going to subscribe to and then work towards it. So personally, I do not, I cannot say that this is something that I, but this is obviously something that makes a lot of sense to me and I'm very fascinated by. And when I say this is not something that I believe in, I really mean that, you know, this is not something I practice even if I believe it, because I do feel it's very meditational, isn't it? Just the realization in itself. And because we are talking about scientific mysticism and all of this, I think spirituality also plays a role into this. Of course, this makes a lot of sense.
I think the idea of mysticism itself would, you know, deter a lot of physicists from this objective truth that we are supposed to be seeking.
Yeah.
But in some ways, Bose argues that it just enriches his practice rather than take away anything.
Yeah.
And what is funny in the story is that, you know, the British circus, the British sahib who owns a circus, has this lion who's balding, which I can kind of relate to because I am also going through, I might need some, I might need the Kuntal Qureshi for myself.
But I'm told that Kuntalin is out of, like, you know, production for years now. So no luck there at all.
Thanks for killing my dreams, Jagyo. I'll just have to go gracefully. But you see this sannyasi figure come in, and the sannyasi being a, I believe, what the West would coin as a mystical figure, somebody who practices spiritual, you know, beliefs.
Yeah.
So he is centralized as the savior of the story, and this kind of inversion of the hero's journey, where the British sahib, who's like a stranger coming onto this strange land, isn't empowered by his own progressivism and heroics, but rather this spiritual leader has to lead him to the solution in some ways. So I think the role of sannyasi is interesting here.
It is very interesting. I think Bose does it deliberately because it is this sci-fi short story, right? And it is very significant because obviously we were talking about anti-colonial sentiments, talking about, you know, local references. And I think the concept of sannyasi in itself is so local, it's so Indian that and although, you know, it has been toyed with a lot, I think that's why Bose brings it in here to add to the mysticism, basically, and probably to give the mysticism a tangible expression in terms of a human figure.
That's a really good point about what you said about local solutions. Mm-hmm. You know, we hear the adage, local problems, local solutions.
Yeah,
right? But in this case, I think Bose is really arguing for that in a narrative that's based in like this ethical care about respecting cultures, in the sense that the sannyasi has this specialist knowledge that we should respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think one thing that I was interested in is, and when you're reading the last passages in Bangla, how does he describe the Kuntal Qureshi being thrown into the sea and the cyclone disappearing? Because in English, you know, we know in the first revision, he had a very scientific explanation. And then in the second revision, he replaced that scientific explanation for a mystical, more ambiguous explanation. So in Bangla, is it also as ambiguous as in the English?
So there are two things I want to say. At the end of the story, when Bose ends it, like, you know, he just throws this oil and the cyclone is basically stopped. He says it in a manner in Bangla as if, you know, it's the end to a nightmare.
Ah, okay.
When he says, I'll just say it in Bangla. ইন্দ্রজালের প্রভাবের ন্যায় মুহূর্ত মধ্যে সমুদ্র প্রশান্ত মূর্তি ধারণ করিল, এইরূপ আমরা নিশ্চিত মরণ হইতে উদ্ধার পাই এবং এই কারণেই সেই ঘোর ব্যত্তা কলিকাতা স্পর্শ করে নাই। And in the last sentence, he says, I'll translate it, কত সহস্র প্রাণী যে এই সামান্য এক বোতল তৈলের সাহায্যে অকাল মৃত্যু হইতে রক্ষা পাইয়াছে কে তাহার সংখ্যা করিবে। So he says that, you know, there is no way to enumerate the thousands of lives that have been saved just because of this tiny bottle of oil, basically. That's the last sentence.
Ah, okay.
And he says that, you know, this very common small bottle of oil had saved thousands of lives, and who is going to enumerate that? So obviously we like reading between the lines, don't we? The fact that he says that, you know, it's just a commonplace, a bottle of oil, but he's talking about saving lives. He's also talking about the sun coming out after a few moments and, you know, everything is calm. Just this whole conversation about the storm stopping and, you know, it's a new day and where people's lives have been saved. It just adds to the mysticism, but also I think gives hope at a time when hope is desperately needed.
Thank you so much for reading that in Bangla. I feel healed. I feel like that was so beautiful to hear. I wish I could converse back with you in Bangla.
Someday.
That is, again, I think this is very interesting because here the intergenerational knowledge is coming through in a very ambiguous way, right? Like the intergenerational knowledge that is embodied in this bottle of hair oil has been responsible for saving so many people, and Western scientists can't explain it. And it's very interesting that obviously the cyclone is going towards Calcutta, which was the colonial capital. So it's not that only this hair oil saved only the Bengali population, it saved a lot of white British colonizers. So when they talk about, like you said, the thousands of lives, that includes both a mix of, you know, the indigenous people, but also the colonizers. And in that way, I guess it's a message, you know, would you say, is it fair to say it's a message to both us as inheritors of South Asia, but also the colonizers, you know?
Well, I mean, we can be criticized for reading too much between the lines, but I would like to say, yes, that's what it looked like to me.
I think let's read between the lines as much as we can.
Not to be carried away by sentiments, but yes.
I think that's, I would agree with that interpretation. So we'll, we can end up finishing touches now. So if you want to have any closing thoughts, just to leave us with any more beautiful wisdoms.
Okay, so there are a few closing thoughts. Firstly, thank you so much, Adil, for the project that you're doing. It gave me an opportunity to read a short story in Bangla. But more than a short story, it's very refreshing to see how even if it is a campaign for, you know, to promote a product, we do not see such promotions anymore. So we have talked enough about diversifying, about anti-colonial sentiments and all of that. But I would also like to touch a bit upon how business also was ethical because it was tied with a lot of other sentiments at that time. It tells us a lot of things historically. My MPhil work was on this, you know, advertisements and colonial India. Okay. Which is why I was also very interested in seeing this, because this was a time when businessmen, they, because of their very pro anti-colonial sentiments, they stopped thinking about profit making and started contributing to it through their business. So, which is very interesting to me. This is the last thing that I want to say before.
That is really interesting. Thank you for sharing that. I wish we had more time to talk about that. Oh, but
we will talk about my MPhil work at a later time for sure.
I'm so glad we could talk about all of the things, good and nurturing. And let's sign off.
I hope there was something that was useful in the whole conversation, Adil. So glad to do this.
That's great. Take care, guys.
Take care. Thank you, guys. Bye.